Good morning, and welcome to Food Talk. I'm Marianne Myers, and I am joined, as always, by my fabulous co-host, Linda Perkins. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning, Marianne. How are you?
I'm well.
I got my apron on. No, I don't.
You don't. In fact, you have eschewed your apron for some of our shows lately. It's a summertime thing, isn't it?
Yes. And then sometimes I just kind of feel yoked to my kitchen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it's actually an act of rebellion.
For everybody out there who has moments of feeling yoked to your kitchen, apparently a good thing to do is just take off that apron.
Yeah.
Cast it aside.
And unplug the dishwasher. I can't do anything. It's broken.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. It's summertime, and we are very, very lucky here on the upper left edge that we are not experiencing heat domes the way that much of the world does.
No, it's really nice. We're very lucky. You're so right.
I was wearing a sweatshirt yesterday. It's been in the 60s.
Yeah.
It has to be a lot warmer than 60s for me to wear a lightweight shirt. but that does not mean just because it's cool doesn't mean that we don't have an abundance of summer produce. It's fabulous.
We sure do. Well, we have a lot of cherry trees on our property, and I've tried to figure out, figure out isn't the right word. I've wondered over the years if they were planted because they're in weird places that you would think if a squirrel was going to bury a cherry seed that that's where they would spring up. You know, they certainly don't look intentional where they are, but they're all different varieties.
Really?
Yeah. So they're like, you know, super showy places like behind the carport, you know, and in the woods. I mean, they're just not any place you would think to plant a tree, but they are all different from each other. And so I have a friend, Salty, who has cherry trees too, and they're so tall. I just don't know how you could possibly pick them.
Yeah.
But what she does is she drives her pickup truck underneath them and then puts a ladder in the bed of her pickup.
Oh.
Super safe, right? Anyway.
Yeah. Anything with a ladder, super safe.
Yeah. And that's how she picks them. And so that makes sense. But ours really aren't anywhere where you could get a vehicle. Another reason that they don't look intentionally planted. You know? But where would a squirrel get such a variety of seeds?
Yeah, it makes you wonder. Somebody must, you know, over the, if they're really big, they've been around for a very long time.
Yeah, they're
When they started, probably everything around them was different. You know?
That could be true too.
Might be.
They're very, very tall. So, well, as everybody knows, of course, all of you, cherries are a skunk's favorite food.
Oh, and so, did we know that?
Yes. Oh. So, I mean, their favorite food, bar none. There's nothing in the universe, like not Snicker bars, not anything, you know, that they would rather have. And so that's always kind of a stressful time of year because it's when we get the skunks in the yard.
Yes, I know. And your two little dogs have made friends with skunks more than once.
Friends.
Well, close enough for, you know.
It's so gross because every time they've gotten sprayed, they get sprayed in their mouth too because they're busy barking. And you can't wash that off, you know?
No.
So every time they look at you and smile, it's like, oh, for 3 months after, you know?
Oh, my gosh. Listerine. Doggy Listerine, maybe. I don't know. Oh, my gosh.
But I love cherry pie. It's a lot of work.
Cherries in general are a lot of work.
The
even
pitting.
Just eating a bowl of cherries is not, you know, you're not going to like pick up a handful of them and like chips or something. But I did eat a bowl full of cherries just yesterday. Because the berries and cherries, there's a zillion fabulous things you can do with them in the kitchen, but hardly anything is better than just washing them and eating them.
Yeah.
I mean, when they're happening, they're just so good. I just want a bowl of them on my desk. And I will slowly finish that off.
Well, pie cherries, I don't even know why they're called pie cherries. I mean, I understand that they're kind of tart, but and they have, you know, a lot of flavor when you put sugar with them, but the pit to fruit ratio is so large. I mean, there's just, you have to pit so many of them.
And I don't know. I think there might be a better way, but I just have a hand pitter, you know, where you put one
too.
At a time in there, and you can do olives and anything that fits. But but that's no way to get cherries ready for a. There's no other way to do it.
Yeah. Well, and then I mean, when you're done, you look like an auto mechanic for a week because of all the staining under your fingernails.
Oh, The price you pay for deliciousness. What else? What have you been cooking?
Well, you know, it's summer, sort of, and so you don't want to do anything that uses the oven a lot. And so on the internet, you know, there's a lot of cooks that I like to watch on the internet. One of them recently is a woman, what's her name? Olivia Tiedemann, I think. And she's kind of sometimes tedious. Maybe that's because her name is Tiedemann to watch, just because she's, you know, she's a bad girl. And her shtick is every time she does a video, she gives you the finger. And sometimes I just don't want to be given the finger, you know. That's just me. But she makes a lot of carrot sauces. And it's just not anything I've really ever done before. I've made carrot dressings for but she cooks the carrot, like roasts it, or I don't in the summer, but I put them on the grill when I'm grilling anything. Uh-huh. When I'm grilling, I fill up the grill. So if I have a couple of chicken breasts, then it's all asparagus and carrots, you know, on all the available grill surface. And so I'll grill them and they get nice and soft. And then you just blitz them and then you put some olive oil and then just whatever you want with it, you know, tahini, you can put miso, you can put, any amount of herbs and spices, you know, shallots. It's turned out to be really good. I really like it. And the thing I've liked it most with so far is cauliflower and then chicken.
Mm. I have a really great recipe that I found in a decrepit magazine at the laundromat years and years and years ago. And it had had its cover torn off and a bunch of other things. So I couldn't even tell you what the magazine was, but I did, because several people had cannibalized this magazine over the decades. And I just went ahead and tore the page out, because the recipe was roasted vegetable salad with carrot vinaigrette.
Oh, nice.
And it is so delicious.
How do you make the vinaigrette?
Yeah, with carrot juice.
Oh, really?
So
that sounds like a lot of work.
Well, unless you just buy a nice little pint of carrot juice.
Oh, the plot thickens.
Just like you would use any other kind of juice, yeah. In a vinaigrette, but and the rest of the ingredients, with maybe the exception of the curry, mm-hmm. are pretty standard vinaigrette ingredients. Mm-hmm. But it's just a really good dressing to put over roasted veg, and would probably be good on other things too, but I have always used it just on roasted veg. So carrots, yeah.
Lorna Zemetkin made a salad once and brought it to my house, and it was so good. And it was fresh vegetables and seeds and roasted vegetables.
Ooh.
And so just any time I have any roasted vegetable, I'll stick it in a salad. And it makes it more special, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And a way to use, you know, roasted vegetables are really great immediately, but then if you put the leftovers in the fridge, they get kind of withery a mm-hmm. little bit. You know, they dry out. Mm-hmm. And so putting them in a salad is a great way
to
revive
then you have dressing
them.
On them.
Yeah, it's great.
So speaking of the internet.
Yes.
And you know that I shouldn't be allowed on it. I saw this thing that I thought was really cute, and I don't know why I'm attracted to cute, you know? Like, do I need like a little baby bunny with big golden eyes? You know, no. So this was, somebody took an egg and they froze it. Like they put it raw in the freezer.
Okay.
And then they sliced it and then they fried it. And so what it was it looked like little teeny tiny fried eggs. Does that make sense?
Oh, right, right.
Because you're taking a little disc. And I thought, oh, that is just so precious. So I stuck an egg in the freezer. And you know how they lie on the internet?
The internet lies, yeah.
They make everything look easy. And if you...
The internet is the biggest liar in the world.
Oh, my God.
Because it's worldwide.
Oh, my God, it's true. So you know how if you know a process of something, if they're like, oh, beef Wellington is so easy, and they're like slap slap slap, it's done, and they're like, well, and you're thinking in your head, well, I've made it, and you know it's a nightmare, and you know, you are a liar. Well, you don't know that if you've never made the thing. But the part that they leave out is peeling the frozen egg.
Oh.
You can't do that. It's impossible. I have no idea how they did it, because blink, and I didn't think, oh, how do I peel it, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I didn't think blink, because they just showed the egg, and then they showed the eggs once they were cooked, and I'm sure that they made those out of like clay.
They're little Play-Doh eggs.
Made them look perfect. Oh, my God. I mean, it's like trying to staple something to Jell-O. I mean, it's just, you just can't do it. It's not a thing that can be done. Oh, it was so funny. So years ago, there's a bakery that I love in San Francisco. It's called Craftsman and Wolves. Craftsman and Wolf, something like that. Craftsman and Wolves. And so, and the reason it was just so wonderful and inspiring to me was because the owner was just such a pastry visionary, if you'll allow me that category of person. but he really was. Just the stuff he came up with. And then you're like, oh, this is just so awesome. There couldn't be anything better. And then the next day he'd be like, I thought of this over breakfast, you know? I mean, it's just that kind of mind. And it's been sold since when I was just a regular bakery. But they had this thing he came up with. It was a muffin with this kind of soft-boiled egg in the middle, you know? And he called it a rebel. So years ago, I kind of tried to understand there are these quick breads in France where they're like a texture of like banana bread, zucchini bread, but they're savory. So they have like sausage and cheese in them and stuff like that. And I just couldn't get into them. And I think it's because as an American, my expectation when I cut into something that looks like banana bread is not that it's going to taste like breakfast casserole.
Yeah.
And so also you don't really want sausage and cheese in your toaster. And I don't have a toaster oven. And so I just kind of gave up on that. But these muffins are a lot the same thing. They're like a savory sausage and cheese type batter, and then they put a soft-boiled egg in the middle, and then they cook the muffin just exactly the right amount of time so that they are cooking the muffin batter and making it a muffin but not the egg, so the egg still stays runny in the middle. You know, really, really something.
Yeah, that's very precise.
Yeah, so my friend Jerry and I, we tried to figure it out, you know, how to do it. And so what they don't tell you is how to peel a soft-boiled egg.
All right.
Poor Dale. I'm like, well, eat this one, honey. Eat this one, too. Eat this one, too. I'm like, I hope you want another egg, because here's another egg. And the dogs are like, no more eggs. It was just impossible. And I thought back on that when I was trying to, like, chisel my frozen egg shell off of my frozen egg.
You need to write an expose internet column.
Egg liars.
All the lying about all the cooking lying.
Oh, there's so much. I know. I would need my own magazine.
Well, it would be a peer, you know, it would be like a weekly or something it would never be over.
No. Anyway, I thought that was pretty funny. Chisel, like what kind of tool? I had those things that you pick crab meat out of the shell. You know, I was trying to use those, and it was just awful.
Oh, God. Ay. The things we try out of sheer, boredom sometimes.
Yeah. I saw another egg thing on the internet.
What was that?
What could it possibly? And this one did not lie. So it was how to make a prettier poached egg. So I have never thought of this. I am like very old and I've never thought about this. But when you crack an egg, or you know what? When you're separating an egg yolk from an egg white, there's that part that's really liquid. And then there's that super snotty part.
Yeah.
I never thought about there being two parts to the egg white. Have you?
Yes, I never have. And the only reason I have is because I found a tip on the internet that works for poaching eggs, because I do poached eggs pretty often, a couple times a week maybe. And that is to put the egg shell and the whole egg into the hot water for just a sec.
Okay.
And then lift it out. And that helps the white be... get together with itself little bit. So when you drop it, then when you crack the egg into the hot water, and I'm usually, I know that poaching, you're supposed to do it really low and slow. Uh-huh. I don't.
You
I
just
do
wail on it.
Well, it's not a boil, but I mean, I think it's hotter than would normally be acceptable, but it works for me. And one of the reasons that I like this method of preheating your egg, basically, is that when you crack it into the water, the white tends to stay together.
So really, how long do you think that you put it in the water in the shell?
I have this slotted tablespoon that I lower them in. So I do one at a time, lowering them into the water. And after the last one goes in, I start pulling out the first ones. And so it's in there. They aren't hot, so hot that you can't touch them.
Okay, so maybe 10 seconds?
Yeah, maybe. Less,
a little longer or less?
I would say 10 seconds.
Okay. Yeah. Nice.
And it really does help. But I like this idea of, are you separating out the watery part?
Yeah. So What you do is you just crack your eggs into a strainer and the watery part out and then the snotty part stays in. So I like your method better because you're not wasting any egg. I'm wasting some egg.
Yeah.
But I just never, and it works, but I've never thought of being two different parts to the egg white, the snotty part and the runny part.
Yeah.
But there is.
But there is. Quickly. I want to remind, just as fast as you would dunk that egg in the water, I want to remind everybody that Food Talk is a co-production of KMUN Community Radio and North Coast Food Web, both fine, fine, exemplary nonprofits in our world and now in the greater world, and both of them having really excellent websites. Check it out, KMUN.org and NorthCoastFoodWeb.org. When you have a sec, you'll be happy. And speaking of worldwide, Linda Perkins, Food Talk and all of the community affairs programs that air on KMUN in this 9:30 to 10 slot during the week, a variety of fabulous different things, are now available on many, many streaming services that carry podcasts. So anybody can find us anywhere.
That's so exciting.
It is kind of exciting.
Hear that, the seven of you?
You'd think that it would be daunting, but we are like, nah, okay. Will this make us behave? I think not.
Still, we're not allowed to swear. I've been told that a bunch of times.
Yeah, yeah. So if there's any moment of silence during Food Talk, it's us reminding ourselves not to swear.
Hey, what do you think about that Blue Zone thing? Have you read on that?
Yeah, I've read about it.
So cool. I mean, just that Astoria is considering becoming a Blue Zone, or I guess the people that do the assessments are here today and tomorrow. And so that's the thing where, and the reason it ties into us is because they have four points that they look at, you know, how someone is connected in like socially and emotionally in the community, if they have purpose in life, and then cooking, you know, people wanting them to just cook healthier food. So not like completely radically changing anything, but just slow little changes over time. And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
So they're having a big meeting about it at the Astoria High School tonight at 5:30. But I don't know. It's just, it's kind of a cool thing. All the blue zones on Earth are just places where people live really long. And so it'd be nice if that happened here, you know?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be totally great. And also, I, you know, we have such a rich, we have such a rich abundance of people providing local food, creating local food, growing it or raising it or catching it or whatever. And that is an expanding thing in our world. Yes. Also, not only do we already have a lot, but we're getting more all the time. People jumping in and doing value add or actually creating the food. So I think it's a really anything that helps that
It makes it easy to eat fresh local food rather than processed food, which is what that whole Blue Zone thing is trying to get people away from, just heating up a box in the microwave, you know?
Yeah, yeah,
because
exactly.
It's just not that great for you.
No, it's not that great for you, but you know, like one night a month I'm gone during dinner time and I kiss my husband goodbye and remind him that there's frozen meals in the freezer. Put that thing in the microwave. Bon appetit. I'm off.
Nothing wrong with that. Well, and then, you know, it feels like, you know, if there were boxed foods and they have preservatives, that would make you live longer. But it's not true.
It's just some awful
twist of reality.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Tom and I used to live in Austin. We lived in Austin, Texas for a long time. And when we first moved there, we were caregivers, on-site caregivers for a really remarkable gentleman who was a retired professor emeritus from UT Austin. Okay. And he always attributed his longevity, because he lived well into his 90s, he always attributed that to bourbon and pork rinds. Because he said the alcohol in the bourbon killed the germs and the preservatives in the pork rinds helped him live longer. So he lived a long time, and I am unable to argue with it.
Yeah. Yes,
although a diet of pork rinds is not my idea of a good time.
No, so. I don't even think I've ever had one. I just look at them and I'm like, nah, hard pass. No.
They're actually quite delicious.
I don't think I need to know that, though, at this point in life.
I just watched Jamie Oliver make some.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because he trimmed the fat cap off of a rack of pork. You know,
I am just not that ambitious.
He just baked it in the oven on the rack, straight on the rack above the pan of pork, okay. You know, mm-hmm. So that the pork roast, it was a rib roast, so that the drippings from the...
So not with a catch pan, really on the rack.
Yeah.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, yeah. And then cut it into slices and used it as a garnish.
Okay.
So, and it looked really delicious anyway.
No, I'm not doing that. I'm so careful with my oven because I hate cleaning ovens. Anything I put in the oven, anything except a covered Dutch oven gets a sheet tray underneath.
Yes, absolutely.
And just, I'm not cleaning that oven unless I have to.
I did it. I don't know what I had brain fade, and I tossed a couple of sweet potatoes in the oven to roast with nothing underneath them.
They're juicy. They drippage.
It's sugar.
Yeah.
They're oozing sugar.
I'm sorry.
So fun to clean that.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. You been making anything?
I was sorry, too. I did a marinated flank steak that is going to be on its third iteration tonight because the first night it was just the sliced flank steak that we ate with mashed potatoes and some corn on the cob because it's getting good now.
Yep.
And a plate of sliced cukes and tomatoes because those are really good right now. And I didn't do anything except some really flaky salt and pepper. And then the next time I cooked it, which was maybe last night, I did just sliced it really thin and did like a Philly cheesesteak style sandwich, only I did it open face, just, you know, horseradish, mayo, mustard, and all this warmed up sliced flank steak with onions and Swiss cheese.
Nom.
Yeah. So tonight, there's enough left to do tacos.
Right on. Well, and steak tacos are so good.
Yeah,
they're just
delicious.
Are.
Yeah, and it's already cooked. Yeah. So I'm very happy. But I think that any of those sorts of things that will get you more than one meal is so. I feel like it's a big bonus.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a gift. And I was thinking that about mashed potatoes this morning, too, because I always make extra.
Yeah.
Because then you can do the potato patty.
Fry them.
Yeah. And it works great for breakfast. It works as a side at dinner. I can make mashed potatoes last for three meals.
Right on. Right on.
So.
I made a pie a different way.
You did?
Yeah, not extraordinarily different, but I liked it. So I don't do a fancy crust on my pie. You know, like I don't flute my pie edges because I think that handling makes them tougher.
Uh-huh.
And so this way, it's a two-part crust, you know, like top and bottom crust. And so I made a blackberry pie. So I just did the bottom part regular, but I did it like I was doing a single pie crust, and I folded the pie crust under. So that way you can really, really keep control of how thick the crust is. So it's very even, you know. And then I put the berries in, and I thicken my berries with instant clear gel.
Oh.
And it's a thickening product that doesn't need heat to thicken. So thicken, it doesn't need it's not like flour or cornstarch where you have to boil the fruit and then it thickens.
Yeah.
You can see how thick your fruit filling is going to be before you put it in the pie. And that's important to me for crisps because then that stuff doesn't sink. That oaty stuff you put on top.
Yeah.
And then with this was a method of making a two crust pie where you just roll out a disc that essentially is just 9 inches. And then, so it just fits on top. It's like you're putting a big cookie on top that's not baked.
Okay.
And it doesn't, you don't hook it onto that crust at all.
It's like just, you would do a pot pie kind of.
Yeah. It just sits there and it sits just right at the edge of the inside of the outside crust, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, and it doesn't shrink?
No. It worked really well. It was just as good as a regular pie. It was a lot less work. Uh-huh. And also the crust on the outside was just as thick as I wanted it to be.
Yes.
And so I liked that method a lot. It also used less pie crust.
Yeah.
And so,
all good things.
Yeah, yeah. And so I like that. And I think part of the success was that I used the instant clear gel so it didn't have a chance to sink, because I think that would be like a detractor for using that method. Like if you were not using something, oh, there's a deer traveling through our parking lot. Speaking of things to eat.
Urban deer. Yeah. Urban deer.
Oh, and a little baby. Oh, they're very cute.
It's spring. It's fresh corn and baby deer.
Yeah, yeah. Both are kind of speckled.
Yeah, they are. You know, speaking of earlier, you said it's summer and you try to do things without turning on your oven for very long.
Yeah.
And me too, but I recently made a casserole. So there goes that idea. But the reason I did
and
it
Christmas
is
Christmas cookies.
Yeah, right. Because nostalgia. The reason I did it and the reason I think it's worth it is because I have this recipe that I got from a 2007 gourmet magazine.
Wow.
You can find it online. I think maybe like through the Epicurious site.
Was that their last year too? I think 2007, 2008 was when they went out of business. So
wow.
You got one of their last recipes.
Well, I used to have a big pile of gourmet magazines. I think I gave them to you. I'm not sure. Anyway, it's a tomato and corn gratin.
Okay.
And because it's lovely, I am willing to turn the oven on. And then step away for a while.
Well, anything corn, you have to make it now.
Yeah, exactly. And you can use, and you want to use ripe tomatoes.
Okay.
Which the reason I mention this is because the one thing I have always thought is wrong with the recipe is that they just tell you to slice the tomatoes a certain thickness and lay them on a rack over a sheet pan for a half hour and let them drain. Mm-hmm. But that never does drain them enough. Okay. So you can either seed them, or I discovered this time that if you just lay them out on paper towels.
Oh, because it would soak it away.
It wicks them. Okay. Yeah. And I don't have to stand there and like carefully seed mm-hmm. tomatoes, but it also gets rid of all that excess moisture, which keeps the because it is in an egg pudding kind of base with breadcrumbs, and it's layered like a strata with breadcrumbs and tomatoes and corn over and over again, that it won't maintain its integrity if you really don't get rid of some of that tomato juice.
Okay, so how do you make it?
Make the egg custard, mm-hmm. and you make fresh breadcrumbs that also have basil and parmesan in them.
Okay.
And then you just simmer the corn off the cob. Take the corn off the cob, simmer the kernels in the cream and the cream mixture that you would be making the custard out of, and then start layering that with the sliced tomatoes with a bunch of breadcrumbs, and then do it again and do it again and do it again until you're...
It's corn lasagna.
It's cornzagna. Anyway, it's delicious, and that's why I deigned to turn on my oven recently.
Wow. Nice. It's worth it.
Oh, we're almost gone.
Aww.
Do you want to sing us out?
Oh, well, okay. It would be kind of long, though. I'm driving my vegetables. I'm driving my green edibles.
While you're singing, I should say that John Stevenson is here for Lost Highways coming up next.
He's my favorite.
I know.
I'm driving my vegetables around. I am driving my broccoli. I'm driving my cauliflower and corn. Driving a bushel of corn home. Oh, I actually forgot that was at the end of the song. And I wrote it.
Writing credits. Thanks, Linda.
Bye.